All right. Hello. You are listening to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. And The Real World, for those of you who don't know, is UBC Film Society's radio segment where we talk about things, everything film related. Not only do we host this radio show, but we also put on various film screenings throughout the week, and we have many more movie-related events that you can check on our Instagram at UBC Film Society. That'll give you all the updates, everything you need to know. For this week, join us tomorrow and in the Norm at 6 for The Substance, followed by Death Becomes Her at 8:30. So this week, we are going to be doing a little bit of a recap. You know, we got a familiar voice on here. We got our guest.
Hello, it's Matthew here again.
Yay, Matthew's back. We couldn't ignore the cries from the fans.
Thank God.
Pouring in droves, pounding on the doors. More Matthew, more Matthew.
It's been really scary.
Yeah,
actually.
I can't imagine being around campus just accosted by like all these fans.
No, of course. Yeah. But it's glad to be back. I'm glad to be back.
Glad to have you back.
Of course.
And we're going to get into everything we liked, everything we didn't like, stuff we got a gab about that came out in 2024. But first, we're going to hit you with some ads. So we will be right back after the break.
Knock, knock. Guess who? MRG Live coming right back at you. This time with a whole new list of upcoming live shows by your favorite artists. Hear this. Marika Hackman, Faye Webster, Empress of, Peter Cat Recording Co., and The Rare Occasions are a few of the artists MRG Live is bringing to you. Follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram to stay tuned with all the artists performing near you. Right side of my neck
still smells like you. Looking for an audioscape to put your mind at ease? Landscapes by Dune is a musical journey through sampling and field recording. From the busy streets of Toronto to BC's picturesque landscapes, the Belgian artist recorded an array of sounds during his travels across Canada. Landscapes will be released on Pop Guitari Records Bandcamp on December 8th and will be available on all streaming platforms on December 15th. For more information, check out at Dune as Dune on Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Tune into Post Rock Friday from 10 to 11 with your host John P for the best in post rock, drone, ambient, experimental, and noise.
What a lovely Vancouver summer night. I can't wait to sit by myself at the beach and look at my phone. Huh? What's that?
Man, what are you doing? Get over here and come jam.
Wow, what a lovely assortment of musicians. What are you guys doing?
This is East Studio. We come together and build connections over music. No musical experience needed. Just come socialize and build your confidence playing music if that's your thing.
Wow, this is so awesome. Now I have a real-life connections with Vancouver's international community of musicians and creatives. Thank you, E-Studio. E-Studio is an international jam group where we celebrate music from all around the world and play together. Follow us on Instagram at estudio.cafe. estudio.cafe.
All right, and we're back, and we're going to be talking again about 2024 releases. The highs, the lows.
Many highs, and I would say a few lows. And the lows got low.
Yeah.
So
we hit a cinematic crater at some points, I would say.
I would say there's one particular point that I could point out, but we'll get to that.
That's for later.
It's called foreshadowing.
Exactly. That's a cinematic thing.
Okay.
See, this is how we know movies.
This guy watches movies.
Yeah. This guy's seen a film before.
Okay.
All right. I think we got to kick it off with the faves. Mm-hmm. Start on a high note.
Of course. I mean, which would you like to start with?
Oh, you know, I'm gonna kick it with Nosferatu. I'm gonna do a quick little gab because
beautiful, please.
At the moment, I'm the only one in the studio who has seen the new Nosferatu.
I want to so bad, and I'm so excited, and I think this is gonna give me like a great frame of reference to go into it. From what I've heard, takes a lot of new direction from it the does. Original.
It takes a lot of new freaky directions. That's the best way I can describe it, including giving Count Orlok a mustache.
Oh, I think that's very contemporary.
It's definitely a choice. You're sitting there like, oh, yeah, he's good. That's a mustache. Mm-hmm. That's for sure a mustache on the vampire.
Guy with a mustache, I think, again, very contemporary imagery.
Yeah.
Very, I think it speaks to a modern audience more than, like, you know, the previous incarnation.
I think, like, that's really, like, the true core of the modernization that Robert Eggers was going for. It's like, mustache. Like, it all boils down to mustache.
Of course. The essence of the personality is hidden inside of it, as
we know. Exactly. But for those of you who somehow have been living under a rock, so Nosferatu was directed by Robert Eggers. It follows Ellen Hutter and the creature obsessed with her. It's actually a remake of the 1922 version, which I believe we talked about last time you were on here.
We did talk about it last time I was on here, which was so fun. I am yearning to, you mentioned you'd seen the Radiohead scored version. I saw the regular, just like symphonic
standard.
It was that I yearn to watch the Radiohead version because I think it would really add to it.
Radiohead version is beyond.
I'm curious, is that kind of the vibe that the new movie takes?
I think so. It definitely, there's definitely a Radiohead vibe. I'm like, yeah, this is so kid A, you know?
This is for the creeps. This is for the weirdos.
That's what I'm saying, you know? Okay. What the hell are they doing there?
Mm-hmm. And I've been asking that.
Exactly. And honestly, I think for me, like, this was like my top film of the year.
Really?
It came in last second. I have been also pulling for this, like, since it was announced. Like,
wow.
I've been such a shill for The Witch. Like, anyone mentions they like any sort of horror, I'm like, oh, have you seen The Witch? It's just a really cool atmospheric sort of thing. So I was very excited when I heard, like, Robert Eggers was doing this other movie.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my God, Nosferatu, vampires. This is so fun. And he absolutely delivers. This is such a little gothic treat.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, what's really, like, stand out about it is the costume design. Like, the costume designer, Linda Muir, has worked with Robert Eggers on, like, all of his other films. This is very much, like, a long-standing partnership. And she's talked about, like, how she was, like in the trenches in these German libraries, like, pulling old-fashioned plates. And she speaks no German, so she's, like, asking people to bring stuff in for her. And it's like, who's gonna know? You know? There's no one from the period still alive.
Count Orlok's as we know.
That's what I mean.
Maybe Count Orlok's out there. We don't know.
He could be. He could be at your screening sitting behind you being like, I'd never wear that.
He could still be out there being freaky towards people.
Be.
And we don't know that. Speaking of that, that is, from my understanding, the turn that this movie takes compared to the original. You could call it Freakferatu.
You can.
Many have been.
You should.
Please.
Please call it Freakferatu. Because this is like the year of the freaks, you know? Like, everyone was freaking it on screen, and Nosferatu was no exception. Like, they went where they couldn't go in 1920. Like, you can see they're itching to make it freaky in the 20s, but, like, censorship and all that. No, you know, they can't even sit in bed together.
Exactly, because, like, what we were talking about last time when we were discussing vampires and the idea of the kind of inherent sensuality of a vampire.
Yeah.
I think it's, like you said, it's very, you can tell that they can't do it in the 20s when they are making that the original Nosferatu. And I'm glad they could finally deliver that, like, full juxtaposition of vampire as a monster, but also vampire in that liminal sensual space it occupies.
It really combines the two in a way that's like, you don't expect. I don't, like, I've never seen it combined in, like, vampire as a monster, but also a freak sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Dracula, like, Bram Stoker's Dracula is probably the best, like, previous iteration of monster as a freak but also sexy that we've seen.
Yeah,
but this one absolutely blows it out of the water. I cannot recommend it enough. Like, such fun atmosphere, and the score is just insane. Not to mention, like, every single actor is absolutely giving their all, and, like, with an ensemble cast like this, it like lives or dies on the shoulders of the actors, and they are killing it.
I definitely think I've only heard amazing things about Nosferatu, and I think it's definitely a must watch.
Oh, absolutely. I cannot recommend it enough. But I will get off my gab box, and we'll talk about something that we've both seen.
Hey, you stay on that gab box as long as you want. I think that is your right as the host.
I think this is just going to be a Nosferatu episode. You just have to sit there and go, Emma, that's right.
Emma, you're so right.
That's so hashtag cinephile of you.
I've vaguely heard what you're talking about.
Exactly. That's the real reason I'm on this radio show. It's just so people can be like, you're so right.
That's an outlet.
That's so real.
Yeah.
Exactly. But next movie I think we should talk about is Dune Part 2.
Dune Part 2. Oh my gosh. I low-key almost forgot. I was trying to think of the other movie we were thinking about talking about, and I was like, Was it Dune? Dune Part 2. So I had a weird experience with it because I had never actually seen Dune Part 1.
Oh my God.
And then I was going to go watch Dune Part 2 and I was like, okay, well, I should watch the first one.
Probably.
To like, well, I mean, I was going to watch the first one, but I was like, especially, I watched it like 2 days before, basically. Yeah. I was like, okay, I watched that one and I was like, okay, yeah, I want to go see the Part 2. And watching them back to back was a very weird experience because, first of all, that's a lot of movie.
That is so much movie.
It's like, a lot of movie
like
to sit
5 hours of movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will say, I think I got to directly compare the experience of watching Dune Part 1 on Netflix on my monitor at home just at like 11 p.m. on a school night.
As it was meant to be seen.
Of course. And like juxtaposed with going to watch Dune Part 2 the next, like a couple days later in big theater, like it was full. Oh my gosh. What were your initial impressions? Because were you a big Dune head?
I was not Dune-pilled.
Not Dune-pilled. Okay.
The first Dune took me 2 tries to get through. And it was also one of those things where I'd seen like half of it, started watching with my family. We were all kind of like, yeah, we don't really rock with this. Like, I think it was one of those things where it's like, oh, we started at like 10. My like mom and dad are both falling asleep. My sister's got better things to do. So we just gave up on it.
A collective, we don't rock with this.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It was like, it's been like a long time since we've had a unanimous, we don't rock with this. Mm-hmm. And it like having it be Dune Part 1 was so strange. But I think the Film Society screened it like a week before Dune Part 2. And like me and my friend were like, oh, we should go see Dune Part 2. And I also like a similar thing to you where I was like, I should see the first one.
Yeah.
So I did actually see like Dune Part 1 in full in a theater, which was nice because it forced me to sit there for like the 2.5 hours. Because I think Dune Part 1 is just such an exposition dump. Mm-hmm. But then like Dune Part 2, seeing this, I saw it in a weird theater as well. Like it was one of those ones where like the screen wraps around you.
Oh, I don't remember what those are called. Yeah. But yeah, I know what you're talking
about.
And
I didn't know until like, what was it, like the planet starts sort of expanding around us and suddenly like I'm surrounded by Timothée Chalamet on all sides. It was like, oh, this is going to be like a capital E experience. And it was, I think, like the second one really sold me. Like I was like, there was a week where I was like, oh, this is all I'm going to think about.
Yeah, I went on a classic. I don't know if I'm sure other people can understand this. It's the modern cycle of enjoying a piece of media. You go watch the piece of media or play it or listen to it. And then you watch multiple YouTube video essays about
it. The best.
And I went down such a rabbit hole of like the Dune novels after that, because I was like, I'm very intrigued to see how they portray any of that on film, because it's so not adaptable to film at all.
There's just so much stuff happening in there.
No, like, well, when you get to the point where he's like his son, his descendant 1,000 years from that point or whatever is like a big worm monster and he's like a god, or it's like it becomes philosophy at a certain point and I don't understand. I don't think they'll be able to get to that point. But right now, I definitely thought I feel like they it was such a weird watch experience because you're engrossed in this plot that's happening, but they also, I'm going to be real, something that always trips me up that I find hard to get over is his name being Paul.
Yeah.
He's got the normalest name.
Crazy name.
And he's got the most basic name. Dude named Paul. And they're talking about like, and like every once in a while, like especially in the second one, the visions really ramp up and you get these really like esoteric scenes of like, I just remember the one when I went to go watch it, the one line that stuck with us afterwards was like something about like, I see my bloodline etched in time. And it was the kind of thing where we were watching it. It was like late night. It was like 11 p.m. Oh, and I was almost like, it's almost too late.
Yeah.
And it's too long of a movie for you to be throwing lines like that at me in like this mirage of a vision. But I think it really ended up working in the movie's favor, that I felt like it had this really strong identity separate from the original Dune.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, it really expanded on the world. I think like the first Dune was unfortunately like necessary in its like yapping and in its setup. And like, as much as it's like, I will never go back and rewatch Dune Part 1, it's like, I could probably rewatch Dune Part 2 pretty soon. Like, it's like, if someone was like, oh, pull up, we're watching Dune Part 2, be like, yeah, okay. Like, I can rock with that.
I did miss, you know, I appreciated that. I was a big fan, and in first movie and second movie, my favorite character, He was the big head honcho of the Harkonnens, and I just called him Gloopy Guy.
As you should.
Not because I didn't remember the name of his faction, mm-hmm. purely because like he's sitting in his big goopy jacuzzi, he's like hitting a dab pen in the second movie specifically. I just remember this very distinct scene.
He does.
Where I just started laughing, and it was a serious scene. Like they're talking about the invasion. Or whatever, they're talking about like the plot, and I just could not get over. I was like, this dude's straight up chilling.
He's straight up like ripping clouds.
That's and I was not expecting that.
Oh yeah, he's so like he's like a little like baguette. You got like the oil and like the vinegar and like the
I
second one.
I directly called the goop. I think I wrote in my I think I directly compared the goop to balsamic vinegar.
It's very balsamic vinegar coated.
I think I did explicitly say I would love to dip a piece of table bread into that balsamic vinegar pool.
We'll go crazy. Like,
yes.
I think Doom Part 3 needs to see that.
We need to see that. We need to see more hors d'oeuvres, and we need to see an exploration of we talk about the spice as a fuel source. I want to see it in food.
Exactly. I want to start talking about spice as seasoning. Like I need like a little side quest for Paul. It's just like going to try and find like good appies. Or something
I think that's the logical progression of Dune 2.
Yeah.
But yeah. Long story short, on this tangent, Dune 2, I think fantastic. Performances as well, all around.
That's like another like ensemble heavy movie.
Oh, 100%.
It is insane the star power that they had in this. Mm-hmm. Like I was hyped just because like I love like Florence Pugh. So I was Florence Pugh, and obviously she killed it. But like everyone was killing it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And I think definitely something I'm continuously surprised by is. I feel like I had Timothée Chalamet pegged as he's the pretty boy. He plays him. I had him pegged as kind of a, the kind of actor like The Rock, where he's kind of just playing The Rock in everything. Yeah. And I had him pegged as that for a little bit. And I think that was partly due to not having seen enough of him on screen in different roles.
Yeah.
And I think now that I've definitely seen him in a lot more things, I definitely got to give him a lot more benefit, a lot more have a beneficial review here that great range on him. I saw Wonka the year before.
Oh my god.
And I think the contrast between Paul and Wonka is a crazy performance.
Insane. Yeah. Mm. I feel like I had something really similar kind of happen where it's like I just saw him as like, oh, okay, like he's whatever. He's like, the white boy of the month, pretty much.
But exactly. Then, like, white boy of the month is what I would describe
okay,
it as.
Okay, like white boy of the month can act. White boy of the month's kind of got range.
Hold up. White boy of the month's acting is this fire?
Why is he kind of killing it? Like
exactly.
I mean, I haven't seen A Complete Unknown yet, but I've heard he does a very good Bob Dylan.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I didn't know what to expect from it because I was like, oh, okay. Like
that's interesting.
Timmy's kind of going crazy. Like, I mean, everyone in like, what's it called? Dune was kind of going crazy.
They
like,
all were incredible. Actresses. Oh my gosh, the actresses were fantastic. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I think like Zendaya, of course. I think I'm a big fan of Zendaya's acting, and I think that she like knocks it out of the park. In this, I feel like this kind of character is like, I feel like it's her forte, and I feel like we're going to talk about Challengers, of course. That's coming up, and I feel like that kind of character I feel like really suits her and I feel like she really knocks it out of the park every time she plays that kind of archetype and I think Dune 2 is no different.
Like I feel like if it was anyone else, I'd be like, oh, okay, like it just feels like it's not indicative of range, but with her it's like I know she has the range, but she's just like playing to her strengths, and I love it when she plays to her strengths.
Oh my gosh, it's like I just like I'm glad she is because I just want to see more of it. I'm like, I'm not I'm not complaining if you're just rocking this like this kind of like the more like kind of like really kind of stoic's the wrong word, but like kind of more like defiant
like
archetype,
standoffish.
Mm. Like I eat that up.
I'm at the
theater. Like full. Oh, that's what I'm saying. And full 3-course meal when like she's in a film, and I love that kind of. Yeah, I love that kind of archetype she plays, and I think Dune 2 it's like works perfectly. I appreciate that as someone who did not know the Dune storyline before watching. I obviously consumed no Dune media before watching the movies, as I think a lot of people didn't. I was pleasantly surprised to see, I know there's going to be a third movie, but I was pleasantly surprised to see the turn that the story takes, and that it's not just like a, and he's a hero now and everyone loves him.
It feels like such a fun departure from the typical sort of like fantasy epics that we've seen on our screens for so long. And like, I feel like even just the task of looking at like something like Dune being like, I'm going to put that on the screen is so monumental that like it is such like a testament to like the whole team working on this, that they've been able to do it in such a well thought out and like well communicated manner. Like it really feels like they've really like everyone's locked in on this. Like this is going to be a project that's going to go down as like something to be remembered.
Like a fantastic, I think they're aiming for trilogy, right?
Yeah, I think so. Understand. At least for like Denis Villeneuve. Like I think he's just set to direct three and then do whatever he's going to do.
Yeah, and I agree. I think like I'm so excited to see the completed trilogy. Yeah. I think like it's definitely going to be one that like I'll want to be able to go watch through like as a whole at the end.
Like to be able to sit down and be like, okay, let's turn on Dune, like in the same
sense. Let's rock. Okay, hey, it's date night.
Yeah,
you know the date's over. You're like, hey, I'm setting the mood. Let's put on the entire Dune trilogy. Let's watch movies for 8 hours straight. No
and
breaks.
I'm talk to you the whole time.
Oh, and I'm gonna pause every few minutes. Yeah. And I think the tragic reality of Dune as like a sci-fi hit is that it is going to become a film bro nightmare.
Oh yeah.
Is that you're gonna go over to his place? He's gonna put on Dune. He's gonna pause it every two seconds to tell you every fact he knows about it.
Every single thing, and he's read the book.
Oh,
he's
you know he thinks the book is better.
Oh yeah, it's just like bookmarked. It's like beat to shit.
Ain't no way. He's got like margins.
Oh
writing in the, you know when they've got writing in the margins on the personal novel that they are just reading for fun.
It's going to be a bad time.
Oh, yeah. No. I think in that vein, I do think that my only detriment to Dune was that when it came out, I did hear too many groups of guys as I was, like, walking around campus discussing Dune and being like, guys, like, did you know that? I heard a little bit too many of the, like, I just think, like, Dune's super profound.
Oh, God.
And I heard a little too much of that. But other than that, you know.
Thoughts and prayers to anyone who is in, like, any sort of, like, poli-sci class.
Oh,
Dune
of course.
Dune is huge.
Oh, gosh, no. But especially considering the explicit political messaging in Dune.
Yeah.
You cannot.
Oh, yeah. That would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
But
no.
Dune Part 2, if you haven't seen it, go check it out. I think
absolutely. Yeah, I'd say check it out. It was really good. If you gotta be able to, like, I'd even say don't watch it at night though, because especially if you're a sleepyhead.
Oh,
if you're God's sleepiest soldier, do not watch this movie in the evening. You need to be a little brain on.
Yeah, this is a morning movie for sure.
Morning.
this is set aside like the whole day. Your whole day has got to be centered.
Oh, of course.
This
yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Make it an event. But speaking of events. Challengers.
Oh, many would call it an event.
I would definitely be calling this an event.
A cultural event, I think. Challengers. What was okay? Because I want to hear your take on Challengers. Like, what was your experience with the movie?
I feel like going to see Challengers for me. It's always weird. Like when I think of like a year as like a chronological like January to January thing. Because for me, a year is very much like September to like August. I'm still on that school grind.
The school grind set. Yeah.
This was like Dune came out like first half of 2024.
Yeah.
So this was like a little spring, summer release, I think like May or something like that.
It was May, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember going to see it with my friend. He told me like, movie about tennis. I'm like, okay, I know tennis. Like, this is Zendaya. I know Mike Face from my brutal theater kid days. That's Connor Murphy. He's gonna rock this shit. Mm-hmm. Let's go see it. I remember walking out of the theater just being like, what? Like, I was like a changed man. Like,
oh, yeah.
In theater.
Okay. Because I'm glad to hear that, because I also knew nothing going into it. I only knew it as the Zendaya Rat Boy Thruple movie featuring tennis.
Oh, my God.
And that's the only context in which I knew about Challengers. And I think that watching it was, oh, my God. I mean, first of all, new Adulterer Anthem just dropped.
Oh, my God.
That soundtrack.
Insane. Like, Trent Reznor.
Trent Reznor.
God.
Incredible. I, like, genuinely, like, that I feel like is, I feel like that soundtrack, I can't even place where I would listen to it in my day-to-day. Because it's the kind of thing where I want to put it on my Spotify.
Yeah.
And I just can't even think about what situation am I in where I want these beautiful tones of this, like, kind of electronic, like, bassy, like, club music playing. Because I can't tell you. I can't tell. Is it a study playlist?
That's what it was for me.
That's real. That's real.
For where it plays for me is in a little cafe as everyone's having a very chill and fun time, and I'm not. I'm locked in on that essay.
Okay.
On Press Repress is on.
Hell yeah.
Like, I think it definitely, like, infiltrated, like, my top five songs of the year with something off, like, Challengers, I think. Which was, normally I'm not, like, a huge score girly. Like, I love a soundtrack.
Of course.
But score is so hit or miss. But something about this one, I was like, okay, I need to bump this. Like, this was also, like, a pre-job score. Like, as I was, like, driving to work in, like, the summer, I was like, I need to get hype. Like, I need to hear the Challengers.
Absolutely.
Score.
Like, I'm hot shit. I'm on it. I'm bumped up. I'm, like, I'm ready to get to work. I feel like it was... I thought Challengers was very interesting about, like, within the cultural context of the year. Not to use the most buzzwordy sentence of all time, but, like, you know, you had things like Challengers, Brat, kind of like that. Like, I feel like Challengers and Brat kind of fall into the same, you know, energy almost. Yeah. And I think, like, the music, it's so funny that, like, because Brat came out in the summer and Challengers was, like, May. So, like, very right before it. And I think, like... The soundtrack has a very similar vibe specifically, and I feel like that's a funny, like, lead in to the summer, and it's weirdly thematically cohesive.
Yeah,
and
it's like
I don't
precursor
exactly. I don't know if filmmakers and media outlets all planned to kind of have a theme for the year, but there kind of was in a way.
No, definitely. Like, especially for the summer. Like, I would not be surprised. Like, you know, Luca and Charlie were, like, in the booth together. Like, okay, we can make something huge for both of us.
Yeah, we got to get something cooking here. And speaking of Challengers as well, you know, the tension in that movie was crazy.
Insane. Like, the fact they actually committed to a love triangle
and
not just, like, a love corner was so insane. Like, it was, like, I feel like I was halfway through, I'm like, am I imagining this? Or is this, like, actually going to lean into, like, a love triangle?
Well, I think my only complaint with Challengers is that I wish they'd leaned in more.
Yeah.
And, I think it's double-edged sword, because I appreciate that it was kind of left up to the audience to, like, read into it, because that was almost more fun in a way.
Yeah.
Because I was like, okay, as someone who's very predisposed to queer readings of media, like, of course I'm going to watch this movie and see... like, oh, I'm getting this vibe. Yeah. I can clearly see, and I'm reading in the subtext, and I'm eating it up. And I kind of love that they're not explicitly beating me over the head with it.
Yeah.
It's fun. But at the same time, I almost wish they'd leaned more into that triangle aspect, because I think in the explicit, like, dialogue of the movie, it is kind of corner. It's more love corner than love triangle. Because I think about the churro, it's a churro, right?
Yeah.
That he bites.
Oh,
that
it's a churro,
walks up, kicks the chair, churro, bam, feeds
churro
it, eats
mouth.
It.
Crazy.
That one was crazy, and I was like, oh my God, they're about to start making out violently right now. But I from my understanding, I think part of that scene was improvised.
I think so, yeah.
I remember.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, that's what I've heard as well. And I think it's like things like that where I'm like, I'm almost like, okay, well, they clearly. Like, read the triangle into it. And I almost wonder, it feels a bit like the script was intending for it to be a corner.
Yeah.
And then the actors were like, hold on. This is so, there's so much tension between us.
What if this was a triangle instead?
Yeah. And I can't confirm that, of course. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I kind of got that vibe. And I think that's my only complaint with Challengers was I wish they leaned into it more.
Yeah, I think if they'd gone into it more, it would just been like the cherry on top of this incredible little sundae of a movie.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I think just fantastic. Like, the I Slept With Your Wife serve is the craziest thing I've ever...
I was, in the theater flabbergasted.
Yeah, genuinely, it can be attested that while I was watching that, like, normally when a movie, like, really builds something up that slowly that you know is coming, I get kind of annoyed. I'm like, okay, I'm not a kid. Like, I get the subtext.
I can handle it,
you
know?
Can just do it, right?
Yeah.
You don't need to build it up so hard.
Yeah.
But in this case, I was just so locked in on the tension in that scene.
Oh my God, I know.
That like when it happened, I was like, I don't even care that I've been waiting. Like I knew this was happening and I've been waiting for the past 3 minutes for them to just do it. It hit. I like popped off in my seat. I was like vocally like, oh, he's gonna do the thing. He's gonna do the thing.
He's gonna do the serve.
No, he's serving for sure.
Yeah.
But no, I think, and I think I want to know what your take is, because I think that Challengers is also emblematic of the epidemic of rat boy thirsting.
Yeah.
This year,
I think this definitely
that's really come to a height. I feel like.
if not unleashed the floodgates, like added to the flood of rat boys for this
absolutely
year. Like I feel like it was so weird, especially seeing like Mike Feist like coming from like musical theater and being like, yeah, that's Dear Evan Hansen guy, you know, like I've seen this guy singing on stage, like long hair, greasy little guy since I was in like grade five, and like seeing everyone go insane for him, and like Josh O'Connor as well, like it was such a time. Like I feel like that was another like brat summer, you know, take away the B, rat summer.
Rats. Oh, hold on. Wait.
I'm making connections.
And did you just come up with that on the spot? And that's an Emma original?
That's an Emma original, yeah.
Wait, hold on.
Copyright now.
Okay, okay. You filed it already. That's going in the...
I move fast. It's
okay.
Like $5 every time it's used.
Hey, in the world of entertainment, you gotta move quick on these things.
If you're not on top of it, you're already behind.
Oh, of course. That's what I'm saying. And I think that... Well, and I think speaking of being on top of it, I think Challengers definitely was on top of the trend.
Yeah.
There's a joke in there somewhere, and I'm trying to get
something,
there. And you see something topping.
Sex,
you know, there's some
rat boys.
Jeez. If there's somewhere, drop it in the comments if you got the
guys,
you get the joke.
Write in. Send us a letter. Call in.
Call in right now.
Finish the punchline for us.
Oh, yes. Anyways, but this is an interactive program.
Oh, yeah.
Is what I've always said on the one time I've been on here. But I think definitely you're so right, where I think if it didn't open the... I would argue that the rat boy was already in the public consciousness.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it simply opened the floodgates to be even more of a mainstream kind of concept.
Took away the shame of it.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's kind of beautiful in a way, isn't it? That's
really like, let people love the rats, you know?
Let people love rats. Let people love thruples. Yeah. And I think that that's, what the biggest takeaway from Challengers is, that, you know, love who you love.
Exactly. I think that's a perfect note to end our faves on.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Hey, love you love in relation to Challengers and also in relation to movies generally.
Yeah.
That's
just
beautiful.
Have a good time, you know? That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And speaking of having a good time, Challengers score? Challengers score moment?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Huge moment coming in.
Huge moment. This is Compress Repress off the Challengers score by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. And when we come back, you're going to be hearing more of our beautiful voices talking about interesting movies that came out this year. See you all in a moment.
Touch.
All right, that was a little taste of Compress Repress off the Challengers score, which if you haven't listened to, do yourself a favor and go do that right after the show. Don't turn us off yet. We still got more to say.
Please don't. You can even play it in the background.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll like underscore what we're saying, make it feel a little more tense, a little more tension.
We're basically just playing tennis with our like voices. Like,
that's
if you think
beautiful.
About it. Yeah.
That's
all
beautiful.
All conversations are tennis.
Wow.
Yeah. I should be in philosophy.
What's the major going, right? Like,
I'm going to do a major switch right now. Uh-huh, changing my career path.
On air? Okay.
Oh, yeah. You guys heard it here first. Philosophy major. This is all about Kant now. I don't care about movies
anymore.
Oh, hell
yeah. Okay.
John Locke, that's what we should be talking about.
Oh, beautiful. But, and no one talks about them enough.
No,
so I think
he's
great.
Never been mentioned.
No, of course.
But until what we're actually talking about, which is not John Locke, as much as it bums me out. I know. We're talking about Love, Lies, Bleeding. Ugh. Great movie.
It was like fun and like entertaining and I
like electric and like bright and, like,
some might
fun.
Say electric, yeah, like maybe like just, you know, maybe brought like a pep in my step, you know what I mean, when I watched that movie.
Yeah.
I want to know what your take is, because that movie was so, I've heard it described as pulp.
Yeah.
And I did have to look up what pulp meant and I get it now, because it's perfect because it's given me a word to describe that kind of movie.
Yeah.
And I feel like that movie, Love Lies Bleeding, was so wonderfully pulpy of a film.
Yeah.
And
like, pulp, I think, is the perfect word for it. Like, I feel like most movies that they describe as like pulp, it's just like, oh, this is just like kind of a gunky film. But like, this is like
a gunky film.
Some films are so gunky. I don't know. Like, unnecessarily so. Like, what's going on?
Like, ooh, they're gloopy.
Yeah.
They're
it makes me feel like, ugh.
Clog my drain a little bit. Yeah. I don't know.
It's just like, ugh. If I pull it out of like, the drain, I'm like, ugh, I don't want to look at that.
It's like, I was not supposed to put that down the sink. Like,
yeah.
That's just
like
clogging the pipes.
Chores beyond my comprehension coming out of the drain.
I got to add some Drano after that.
Yeah.
I think Love, Lies, Bleeding, I do think it's interesting because it's like, I love how, like, because so many pulpy films are so centered in like a heteronormative space.
Yeah.
And like historically, like I say historically, but it's like, you know, in the last like few decades,
yeah.
Like, you know.
That's historic.
Yeah, it's historic. I feel like pulp has been such a heteronormative centric style of movie. It's been so done to death in that, like, and it's all about the guy and he's moody or whatever, and then he gets the girl, and it's like it's a very, and like, they're all good, don't get me wrong, I'm not hating on any like of them. I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head, but like you know,
I think Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction, you know,
like,
is like
in the name, but
yeah, and you know, I think that's a controversial take I'm having if I kind of clown on Pulp Fiction a little bit, but I think it's very like, it's a little formulaic in that sense of like the vibe is very, you know, it's very expected. And I really appreciate taking that pulpy energy and adding that queer element to it. And I think that does make it feel a lot fresher.
Absolutely. Like, it feels like it's really bringing something new to this kind of like, oh, you know, forbidden love kind of story. Like, oh, you know, we can date, but there's so much you don't know about me. But it's like, yeah, but there's so much you don't know about her. Like, you're both kind of freaking it in different ways.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it was incredible U-Haul representation on screen.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so happy to see it.
Literally, give me more of it, you know?
Right.
That's all I want.
I think it's an underrepresented category of love, the U-Haul kind of style, right?
Oh, yeah.
They meet, say I love you 2 days in. Like,
exactly.
And I do think, something I did think that was funny, because I thought that when I was watching the movie, and then I did think, you know, it's so funny that we call like that a specific thing. Like that's like U-Haul lesbian couple, versus if it was like a man and a woman, it's like you just be like, wow, so passionate.
Yeah.
I do think it's very funny that we have different terms for that.
Like it's not both just like, oh, you know, the passion.
Oh, it's just
like they're
passionate.
Meant to be. And they're like, no, they're U-hauling it.
They're U-hauling
like, oh,
it. I think it's very interesting that we have that kind of dichotomy, because I was thinking of other pulp films and I was like, well, that's a very standard for a pulp film. Now that I think about it, why is it like we have such a different terminology for it? And I do think that's interesting. But I think another thing I really appreciated is that it's like, it's a lesbian story that does not center them being queer as a struggle.
Yeah.
As like, that's necessarily like the hard, it's not like, and I kind of get what I mean when I say that, where it's like, it's not like
that's
the movie's not all about like, and isn't it so difficult?
Yeah.
It's kind of just centered on their relationship.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that, because you don't, I feel like when you depict queerness on screen, mm-hmm. it can really sometimes fall into the trap of like, we want to depict like the realistic, like the, just the struggle yeah, of it and the struggle. Yeah. And it's like depicting queerness like purely through the like lens of struggle yeah. is like kind of deprives it of a lot of the joys. And yeah. I think that this movie did a great job of just like, you know, it has those darkest hours. It has the ups and downs, but they're all just related to their relationship.
Yeah.
It's like, nothing to do with like, oh, we have a homophobic dad or something. Yeah. It's like, no, it's that never really pops up unless I'm misremembering something.
No, I think it's like, oh, yeah, the problem is that the dad is like actively like, you know, running this like cartel and not that he's like, my girl can't kiss girls. It's like that's not the issue that he's taking with the relationship, mm-hmm. which I think it's so like refreshing because it's like, you know, like it's like 80s, 90s, like. There's going to be homophobia. Everyone knows, like, it's, mm-hmm. there's going to be homophobia. But they don't insist on, like, making that, like, the central focus, which I really appreciate.
Yeah.
I think it's also something I really enjoyed about this film was, like, how they tied, like, bodybuilding to this body horror. Like,
yes.
I feel like I haven't seen that enough, but, like, it's... Like, it feels like such an easy connection to make that I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen it on screen more. Like, mm-hmm. this idea of, like, just pushing your body to the limits of what, like, it can physically take just to, like, perform for, like, 5 minutes on a stage.
Yeah.
Is so, like, insanely, like, there's so much space there for body horror. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, the director, I haven't seen any of her other stuff, but I know she cited, like, Cronenberg like as a big sort of influence with how she dealt with like the body horror of mm-hmm. this, and I feel like you can really see that like in like when you get like the veins sort of like rippling
how it comes through and like those every time you like it cuts in on like because that builds up throughout the movie of like mm-hmm. and her muscle bulges here and there's the veins and there's kind of that like the sound design on that too. I will also say this movie had great sound design, I felt in terms of like the emotion it could express through mm-hmm. like through just like not necessarily the music even, but like also just like the audio generally, like you, like we were talking about like the muscles, right? Like every time when like the kind of muscle, like the kind of sound is like the blood pumping, the kind of ringing in the ears, like it was a surreal part of the film when oh my gosh, the second main character, the bodybuilder,
Katie O'Brien, I'm forgetting.
Katie O'Brien, but I don't remember what her character's name was. Yeah, it was when Katie O'Brien's character is like going to the competition, but is like overdosing on
Jackie.
When Jackie's going to the competition and is like mm-hmm. overdosing, it's such a like the audio design on like putting you in her head as like, you know, the ringing, it was nauseating a little bit to watch. And I think it struck a really good balance of being nauseating to watch, but not too nauseating where I actually had to be like, I this is making me really uncomfortable. I can't watch
this. Like, I have to like leave the theater. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't seen The Substance like for that reason, just because everyone I talked to was like, I couldn't finish my popcorn, man. Like, I had to like put that down. It's like, what is happening in there? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like this was kind of like, this struck a good balance for me of like,
absolutely.
The body horror is still present, but almost as an undercurrent.
Yeah.
I feel like we saw that a lot, like, in movies this year of, like, horror as an undercurrent. Like, I know the next mm-hmm. one that we want to talk about, I saw the TV glow.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of sort of, like, horror that isn't, you know, like, in a jump scare or in a way that's designed to immediately, like, invoke a reaction. It's more like when you think about it, you're like, oh.
Which, absolutely. And that's something that, like, I've really appreciated that, like, movies mm-hmm. recently have kind of strayed away from is the jump scare. Because I think that so many – it's been so perfected at this point, which I will touch upon that briefly with one of, like, the least favorites of the year for me. But, like, I think that when you stray away from that kind of, like, horror and you stray more into, like, the conceptual horror, like, the thriller kind of space mm-hmm. and, like, finding ways to make something – scary without just needing to like flash a light at you, without like kind of abusing like the body's natural like fear response to like a loud noise, for example.
Like, because like I'm gonna jump if there's a scream, but like then if it's more of a horror that like makes me like I have to like sit with it, like it's like, oh, the horror, maybe the horror was like the friends we made along the way. It's like, yeah, okay,
maybe the horror was, maybe it was humanity. Whoa. All along,
are we the horror?
Whoa.
Damn.
And speaking of that, I feel like that's a, unless you have any other last thoughts on Love Lies Bleeding.
Love Lies Bleeding, go see it.
Yeah. I really liked it. That ending too. Wild ending.
Beautiful.
Crazy ending. Generally, very fun movie. If like, you know, I think as long as you can like handle a little bit of discomfort in a in a movie, I think it was awesome. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Super fun watch. To kind of like speaking of undercurrent of horror though, I saw the TV Glow.
Wow. What a movie.
What a movie. It's the kind of thing where like I do have like problems with it just in the sense that like, you know, certain allegory, I think like kind of gets a little messy at a certain points. There's a couple moments in the movie where I'm like, oh, am I supposed to be idolizing this? Or like that's a little like the movie kind of feels like I'm so, you know, the subtext with the friend character. Oh, my gosh, I don't remember her name. Yeah. I don't remember any of the characters' names, but like
I think Maddie, maybe
like something like Maddie, something like Maddie.
Yes, Maddie.
Maddie, yes. Thank you. like this, you know, there's the whole thing where it's like Maddie like goes off to, and it's like an allegory for suicide, and I think that you know, of course, that's a sensitive topic, and I do think that I do get a bit of an issue with the movie in the sense that like. It's almost like you're supposed to be thinking that she made the right choice and the main character is making the wrong choice. And it gets a little messy with the allegory there where I'm like, ooh, wait, are we, should we be glorifying this? I don't know if that's necessarily what we should be glorifying, but I think generally the movie was a fantastic, like, oh my gosh, the intrinsic horror of like, and I think kind of juxtaposing Love Lies Bleeding with like in the fact that, you know, the queerness was present in the movie, but not the primary conflict. I think it's interesting to go from like I Saw the TV Glow like this to I Saw the TV Glow, where like I Saw the TV Glow, the kind of intrinsic queerness of the film is the central conflict. Yeah. And I think that's a very interesting kind of juxtaposition there.
Yeah, I feel like that's so interesting that like you read that as like suicide. Like I've read it a totally different way.
I think it's so funny because like it's the whole like, I'm going to go bury myself. Yeah. I think it's funny because I do think that the movie is like, that's the thing I think is so rich about the movie is there's so much allegory.
There's layers of it.
Because it's like that scene I took a little more literally.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like you're saying that I read it that way because it could also be allegory.
Yeah.
And it could, none of it could be literal and it could all be completely allegory. And I think that's so interesting about the movie.
That's kind of like the beauty of the film is there's so many different lenses you can like take to it.
Yeah.
I feel like Jane Schoenbrunn, like, they just really have, like, their finger on the pulse of, like, what, like, we're kind of afraid of, like, this generation that's kind of becoming adults. Like, this idea of, like, just being constantly, like, stuck forever and, like, just, like, you're not, you know you're not living the life you want to lead, but you don't know how to lead that life. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like this, like, in-between, especially just with, like, the fact is, like, oh, most of us will never own a home or something like that.
Yeah.
It's, like, the traditional of, like, you know, go start a family, 2.5 kids off like a high school diploma is just like not realistic anymore. And it's like, also, well, how do we adjust to that in this like new landscape? And I feel like that's something that's really like kind of underscored in that is that like uncertainty and trepidation towards the future.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I think that, like, that, I mean, you have such a nice, concise reading on it, which I think is like, I think that's like like you said, the beauty of the movie where it's like, it's so conceptual in its ideas. And like, while 100%, I think I kind of agree with you. I think like, and this is speaking for someone as like, you know, the movie did really affect me. It was, you know, it was honestly like as like a queer reading of the movie, like obviously, which is kind of the whole thing.
Yeah.
It did really like personally affect me. The messaging of like, you know, the fear of living inauthentically and then running out of time.
Yeah.
And then like how every day you don't live authentically is a day you're running out of time to live authentically. And I think like that. That really spoke to me. And I think like the movie, it's so funny because like it was really poignant to me and like really affected me. And then I also had like the, I almost wish it was like, I loved how allegorical it was, but at the same time I was like, I wish it was slightly like a little less because I'd love to have a little bit more concrete to go off of. Because it kind of, it gave me like a feeling of unfocused dread.
Yeah.
But I didn't really have anywhere to go with
contain
it, right?
Yeah,
I was kind of like
sitting in and be like, oh, that was a good movie. I hope I never see that again.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where I'm never going to watch it again.
Yeah,
absolutely not.
Wait, I could not take a second hit of that.
Yeah, and speaking of sound design, right? Like that movie made great use of that kind of droning tone that, from my understanding, it's been used more in movies because it's kind of like engineered to make you nauseous.
Yeah.
Like the droning sound, like it's engineered to make you feel that nausea by the way it impacts your body.
Oh my God.
So I noticed it made a lot of use of that, which definitely added to that kind of unease.
For sure. Like the sound design in that is really like, it's really a huge part of what creates, I think, that atmosphere and that general just like something's off kind of vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think like 100%, like that movie totally hits that nail on the head of like it communicates that feeling perfectly. Yeah. And I think, like, whether or not you, like, resonated with certain messages or not, like, surely the level of allegory in the movie and, like, the feeling of unease it can impart, I think is, like, everyone can get something out of that. Even if you're not necessarily resonating with the queer messaging of it, I think you can definitely get something out of, like, the artistry of the movie.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, unless you got anything else, I think that's, like, a perfect place to end with our interesting movies of the year.
I will also, the only thing I'd say about TV Glow as well, I have very complicated feelings about I saw the TV Glow again because, like, it was very resonant for me, but I also had, like, there are certain things. And I'm trying to remember, I'm terrible with actors' names. The main character.
Owen,
yes. Yeah, the actor's name, yeah. The
actor's name is, I think, Justice Smith.
Justice Smith, yes. The one thing I did that did kill me a little bit was Justice Smith looking the exact same as a child to as an adult.
Yeah, it was just Justice Smith with a little bit of gray hair.
Like Justice Smith, but he got a little gray hair, and Justice Smith, but he, like, had a bit of, like, his hair was, like, a little different, and I just think that was very funny that I was like, so he's supposed to be, like, 10 years older right now, and he looks exactly the same.
Identical.
Yeah, that one did get me a little bit, that I was like, that's he does real. Not look any younger that, when he's a child.
Yeah, that definitely, like, pulled the immersion a little bit. Yeah. And you're like, okay, this is the exact same guy with a little tiny age makeup.
Yeah, I was gonna say the gray hair did kill me a little bit. Like, I did laugh a little bit at, like, oh, it's Justice Smith, but he's gone gray. It looks the same.
With, like, Snapchat old age filter.
That's
on.
What it felt like. It felt like Snapchat old age filter. And I did still enjoy the scene, but it did, like, take me out of it for a minute. And I had to be like, okay, suspension of disbelief. Yeah. It's fine. Let's not think about it too hard.
No, surreal. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's kind of it for interesting movies of the year.
Hell I think we'll round it out with a bit of a rapid fire least favorite, because God knows, you know, keep that negativity short and sweet.
Of course.
Hell yeah. So
I gotta say it. You know, first, I think we'll end with, like, the bottom for me.
Yeah.
First, I'd say Quiet Place Day
really?
One. I didn't, like, okay, I watch movies I know I'll like. So I don't, typically, I don't have a lot in the least favorite category.
That's
so Quiet Place Day One didn't have a lot of competition in terms of, like, I just thought it was very aggressively mid, and that made it one of my least favorites because it didn't make me feel anything. I think Quiet Place Day One is an example of, like, what we're talking about with, like, horror. And, like, it's one of those movies that it's still doing sit there in silence.
Yeah.
Loud noise.
Yeah.
And it's still doing that. And I just don't. When it's the whole movie, I appreciated that, like, there's a little bit of pathos in the characters in Quiet Place. And I appreciate that. That's why it's not bottom of the barrel for me.
Yeah.
But I just, like, I'm going to watch it with friends. It was, like, noon. It was, like, noon on, like, a Saturday. And we went in and I was like, man, I'm just getting nothing out of this.
Yeah, it's just a movie that you, like, sit and watch. Like, I saw that.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just the same thing as all the other ones. I don't know if you cared too much for it,
I honestly was one of those ones, like, I love the cat.
Cat rocks.
Like, I watched it, and I kind of, like, forgot I watched it. Mm-hmm. I was, like, very much, like, I was like, yeah, okay, this is, like, a good, like, three for me. Like, this is a week three, you know? Like, I'll never revisit it, but I had a good enough time.
Yeah.
But and I, like, haven't seen any of the other Quiet Place movies, so I feel like the shtick hasn't quite, like,
worn
down on me yet. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Going in blind. Oh, it's a prequel. They can do this to me.
Technically, it's the first movie you should watch.
Exactly. You know, it sets it all up.
Yeah, exactly. And then to speak to, I think, the mutual bottom of the barrel for the year, Madam Web.
I think this is misplaced, actually. I think this is top tier.
Oh, really? Top of the list?
Yeah. Above Challengers.
Wow. Six stars.
Six stars and two hearts.
The letterbox coming out. Wow. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Repeat watcher.
All my top four. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Like, your whole favorite movie list, it's all Madam Web.
Yeah. I bought Pro just so I could, like, change the poster so I could look at a different Madam Web every day.
So all the top movies actually just have a Madam Web poster because they're supposed to represent Madam Web.
Exactly.
No, and I think that that's something that culturally we should be putting Madam Web at the forefront because I think it is peak cinema. I think the fact that it's a superhero movie where they hit the villain with a car three separate times and that's, like, how they... I just can't get over that, to be so honest with you.
God, it's just such, like, a mess. Like,
it's such a mess.
Every single aspect of it is just, like, so insanely Like, yeah. Unput together.
Technically,
I have no
you know, direction. Like, yeah. acting direction and just cinematography.
Yeah.
It's so all over the place. I don't know who any of these people are. I don't care about any of these characters.
None of them
Who the hell is Madame Web?
I don't know.
She doesn't even become Madame Web until the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, why am I... You don't watch a superhero movie to see... The 3 months before they became a superhero, right?
Like, what if it was just like, what if you went to go see Spider-Man? It was just like Peter Parker doing homework. For
Except like worrying about like, he was like doing like titration.
Yeah.
And you had to watch a full like real time Peter Parker doing titration. And then he messes up and like, ah, shit. And it's like, he's like fumbling with it. And he's like, oh no, I got like one drop in. I have to redo it.
What are the moles of titanium again?
Yeah, see, that's like, what I'm saying. And that's what I really want to see is I want to see Iron Man, but it's just Tony Stark as a businessman.
Yeah.
Like, it's the first part of Iron Man 1, but for the entire movie.
He's just making business deals.
He's making business deals and being an awful, like, family member.
Yeah.
And that's, like...
I think that's what we need to see.
Awful.
Superhero movies, but only at the very end they hinted them maybe becoming a superhero later, possibly.
Superhero movies, no superhero.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hoping for.
That should be the future of cinema.
Exactly. And I'm glad that we're, you know, the next generation of directors and, you know, directors and all that.
Yeah.
And I think that... Really, we'll bring that energy to 2025. I'm hoping for Madame Web 2, 3, even, 4.
Madame Web 2, 3, 4, and a web series, spinoff, stage play, whole thing.
You know, I'd recommend if you do watch Madame Web, watch it the way I watched it, which was on a Discord call with like five other people. Someone is streaming it from their computer, which is a... shaky camcorded recording from a weird website. And I don't think I can say that legally on air, but that was the way I watched it, and it was an experience.
That's how you should watch it, you know?
Hey, all I'm saying is I wasn't the one who torrented it, so that's not
there
on me. But yeah, I'd say that one was definitely bottom. If we've got a minute, I've realized I totally forgot to mention this. We were talking about most interesting movies.
Yes,
can I throw this last one in
Absolutely
there?
Absolutely throw this in. This is
Flow?
Banger.
Banger. Just won best animated feature or animated movie at the Golden Globes.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, just won.
Oh, my God.
Huge movie. Animated movie, no animals, no dialogue. It's totally just animals doing their thing.
Oh, my God.
Made by a Latvian animation company that used exclusively Blender to make the entire film. Incredible showcase of what's doable in that program. Gorgeous, like the water in it. You know, Flow is essentially, it's kind of like a slight biblical allegory of like, you know, there's a flood. It's like animals trying to like work together and like survive on this boat. And like as they go through this newly flooded world and try to understand things. And the best part about it is I'd say that the animals aren't like personified. They're not they're not made into kind of people. They're not anthropomorphized.
Yeah.
They act like animals. The cat is the main character, the focal character. It acts like a cat.
Yeah.
There's no point where it becomes like a human and is like, you know, we need to work together, team.
Yeah.
It's like...
Moralized.
Yeah. It never gets moralized. The animals are always animals. And I think that that's such an amazing, like an interesting take that you don't see in a lot of movies nowadays have animated anything. It's always
anthropomorphized. We don't see that enough. Like they're always like just talking animals.
Exactly.
Like, so, they don't do that.
Yeah, 100%. They don't do that in real life. So I'm Flo, fantastic movie if you get the chance to watch it. I think it's playing at the Rio Theater. Saturday, I think, is their last night they're showing it. Totally check it out if you can. I cried. I enjoyed it. It was beautiful. I loved it. You know, the slight biblical allegory is interesting. It's fantastic movie. Super lovely.
That sounds incredible. Like, I'm honestly bummed I haven't seen it yet.
Check it out. Check
I
it out.
Definitely will, especially after that stellar review. Like, yeah. I am hyped. I will be checking out Flow as soon as I can. And
I'm not sponsored.
We recommend you guys do too.
Yeah.
Go check it out. If you're in Vancouver, see it at the Rio. That's always a fun time. Make a night of it, you know?
Support a local theater.
Exactly. There's literally nothing to lose. You get to see a great movie at the end of it. And I believe that is the end of our time.
Wrapped
for our
up.
Recap, which is crazy. We just condensed a whole year down to like an hour.
We didn't miss anything.
No. We spoke about every single release this year.
There were no bullet points that we did not have time to hit.
There were no movies that were advertised that we did not talk about.
Exactly.
Don't come at us.
Mm-hmm.
We did our best. And you know what? I think our best is good enough.
Beautiful.
So,
hey.
We'll see you guys next week. Same time, same place. CITR, 4 to 5, the real world. You all already know the drill. I've been Emma.
And I've been Matthew.
And we'll probably continue to be these people.
Maybe.
Yeah. Who's to say?
Who's to say?
But all right. I will see you guys all next week. Matthew, thank you again for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Hell yeah. And that's all for today. See you guys later.